Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Who is in charge of a teenager's soul? God or TikTok? What do teenagers today believe? Do they believe in a deity, in life after death, in miracles?
People do bizarre, amazing, inspiring or crazy shit all day on TikTok. And if it's good or inspiring enough, loads of people listen and follow them. That's kind of how it worked for Jesus, right?
That's Ramon, a 16-year-old. And you know what? He has a point. Welcome to another episode of You Don't Know Me, a podcast that examines the world through the lives and experiences of teens today. I'm Chloe Combe. Today we're talking about spirituality and religion and whether there's a place for it in the lives of today's teenagers. In America, a third of young people say they don't belong to any religion, while in the UK it's 3/4. Meanwhile, we've got 86% of Western young people using social media daily. It strikes me that the internet has filled the space that religion once occupied. The internet is God 2.0, all-knowing, all-seeing, omnipotent. You don't pray, you search. But that doesn't mean that today's teens aren't still seeking meaning and guidance. It's just within their social media apps rather than a place of worship. One recent quirk of spirituality on social media has seen a 75-year-old man become a TikTok sensation as he allows teens to experience their past lives through hypnosis. Brian Weiss is an American psychiatrist, hypnotherapist, and author who for decades has specialized in past life regression. And by the power of TikTok, teens have become his new disciples. Teens are experiencing their past, and apparently their best lives, through his hypnosis, visualising themselves as everyone from Martin Luther King to Cleopatra. Obviously, I had to see this for myself, so I roped in my 18 and 15-year-old sisters, Isabel and Rhiannon. Okay, the girls are now going in. I'm relaxing.
Let go. Go deeper and deeper relaxed. Let my voice carry you deeper and deeper relaxed.
Okay, so I've come to the other room and the girls are very deep under now and they're at the beginning stage of the past life regression. So I'm going to go back in a minute and see how they're doing.
In a few moments, when I count down from 10 to 1, go so deep that your mind is no longer limited by the usual barriers of space or of time. So deep that you can remember every experience you have ever had.
When they came to, I asked Rhiannon, she's 15, how the experience had been for her.
When you first, like, go into your first memory, I was in this huge bathroom. I was the only person in there, and it was, like, a big sunken bath, and I was sitting, like, in this bath. And then three women came in, and they were, like, pouring oil into the bath. It was, like, the whole room was... It was a huge room, and it was, like, really steamy. And they were, like, pouring all these things into the bath, and they put, like, a glass down, and I left. And then it moved. And I was in this huge library, like an ancient library. And I remember there were so many things that we don't have even now, like ancient books. And I remember reading it, and I was like wandering around this huge library. It had statues in it. I was there for hours.
This sounds like some bonkers fever dream, but knowing Rhiannon as well as I do, she's not a girl prone to theatrics or exaggeration. So I took her word for it. I was curious to know how she felt now.
Now, I feel quite relaxed. I think it's because the way your body feels, like you can feel like where you are and you know that you can open your eyes, but you're not really, you don't feel like connected. You feel kind of floaty.
Do you like the process of doing this? Because it's really cool.
Yeah, I do. I do actually quite like it because it just makes me feel like, it makes me feel relaxed.
Yeah.
You know, like it's kind of like meditation.
My other sister, Isabel, she's 18. She's done this a few times before. In her experience, she was a Roman empress. She experienced giving birth and witnessing her daughter dying. By both girls' description, it's more visceral than a dream. You plunge into water, you smell smoke, and you feel emotions. Are the kids really experiencing an epiphany, or are they willing it to happen because their mates are, and it gets some likes on TikTok?
Why do you think this past life thing has taken off with, like, teenagers?
It's an escape, maybe.
People have mistakenly concluded that this is a generation driven by materialism and the superficial desire to own stuff and look good. But this is a million miles from the truth. Trust me, I've talked to loads of them. This is a generation desperately seeking meaning in the unknown world. Their lives have already been bookended by two global recessions. The world is on fire. A pandemic is raging. Jobs are disappearing. And there is sadness everywhere. It's not really surprising that this moment in time kind of feels like a reckoning. What younger generations do have is an abundance of connectivity and information. That, coupled with a growing sense of upheaval and danger, is undoubtedly fueling a quest for meaning. Even though the world is generally more secular and scientific, there is an obvious re-examination and appraisal of religion going on with young people, as there has been in every point in history when there's been a crisis. Perhaps what unnerves parents is that their role as caregivers and fonts of wisdom has been handed over to the internet and more secular ideologies. But those who don't have parental figures in their lives are way more susceptible to these new forms of spirituality.
The first time I met Mariella, it was about 6 weeks after my mom had died.
This is Meehan. He's 17 now, but he was 16 when he first met Mariella.
It was fucking freezing. You've been in a New York winter, right?
Sure.
I've been at her church. She was a really devout Catholic her whole life, and I just wanted to go and tell God to fuck off, you know?
This was the second time I'd encountered Meehan. This time it was over video call, but the first we met at a bereavement counselling session for teenagers in the US just last year.
Like, that's what you do to your humble and devout servants. You kill them slowly with cancer. The cancer had started in her breast, but it spread everywhere before she noticed because we didn't have health insurance. Okay. We couldn't afford it. So I wanted to tell God to fuck off.
How could we blame him? This is the ultimate betrayal from a benevolent God, taking your loved ones away from you before their time.
I was so angry. And I just got into it with this priest, Father Michael. He tried to tell me God had a plan for me and her, and I just lost my shit. So much so, he had asked me to leave. I managed to get kicked out of a church, which if you saw my neighborhood and all the drunks and addicts that kick back at church for warmth, there's some food or whatever, that's going some.
That is impressive going. So what happened next?
So I ran out of church, like, screaming all sorts of profane shit and laughing, and there are all these ladies, you know, those nice ladies who are older and some volunteer at the churches, all freaked out. Women like my mom, I guess. And this is really horrible, but I start screaming at them too on my way out, telling them they were fucking stupid and how God was dead and all that kind of stuff. And how he would probably let them die too. I felt bad. I went back and said sorry a few days later when I calmed down. They're pretty nice about it. They knew my mom and were really broken up about her dying too. So I was walking back home. My grandma had come to stay so we could figure out what to do next because there wasn't enough to cover the rent, let alone the bills. So I was going to have to move state, even though I was in the middle of school. And I was just deep into depression and crying a little bit when I passed this psychic shop front. It was some sort of gaudy and cheap looking, but it says something about wanting to contact someone from beyond. And so I just sort of did it, even for a practical joke on myself, you know?
Mm.
I felt so silly, as I don't believe in any of that stuff. Inside, it was really stupid. You know, dream catchers, those weird tacky little water fountains that emit smoke, posters about chakras and third eyes and all that. It was kind of late, and I guess there is this reception room, but there was no one there, and this lady comes out with another lady, and the younger lady was, like, weeping. They embraced for a full 5 minutes, and it was so intimate. I kind of felt bad, like that I was sitting there watching, but I couldn't just leave, so I started looking at my phone. And after a bit, the crying lady left, and the older lady was there, kind of staring at me. She was hilariously thin, like smaller than 5 feet by some, and was so that type. It was almost like she was playing a role. You know, like that lady in the really old film Poltergeist? She even had a similar sort of voice.
I can actually picture this so, so well. So go on, what happened next?
Right, so she was just staring at me, and I was kind of getting uncomfortable, and then she said something like, "You're really missing her, huh?" And I was flabbergasted. So she beckoned me to follow her in the room, and I went with her. The room was oppressively hot, and she was still wearing this really thick wool house coat like my mom used to wear, and these weird snow boots. She had a headscarf on, which also seemed a bit much, you know, like, come on, lady. She's pretty direct about asking for money, but she called it a donation, and I only had $20, which is supposed to be for food money for about a week with food banks. We were managing on about $20. But she said that I could stop worrying about money because something would come along soon, and I guess I believed her. She started right away with finding out who the missing person was, but I've subsequently discovered the vast majority of people go to a psychic for love, especially if the love is unrequited for money worries or if someone has died, and that someone's usually a parent or a child or lover. I was only 16, so it was unlikely I'd have a lover who died, and definitely not a kid, so it was likely to be a parent. And she asked what I know now, some pretty obvious digging questions. And then she started guessing some stuff, which I think in hindsight was pretty non-specific, but freaked me out. A lady beginning with maybe J or maybe C wanted me to know she was in a better place and she loved me and all that. My mom's name was Jocelyn, so that blew my mind. We talked loads, and I cried, which I hadn't cried in front of anyone else. And then she gave me the stone for protection. It was pink. I still have it. Before I left, she told me that I'd be getting a blessing very soon, and if I did, I had to come back to her.
God, so how did you feel at this stage?
If I'm honest, I was hooked straight away. It was just what I needed and couldn't find anywhere else. I genuinely felt closer to my mom in that hour. I think I would have gone back anyway, but literally 3 days later, Me and my grandma got this letter. It turns out my mom had taken out this life insurance policy with her job and the cancer was covered and I was going to get $17,000. And in my mind, this was the affirmation I needed. Mariella was connected to my mom from beyond the grave.
Of course.
So I told her straight away about the money and she told me not to pay her until the money came as I needed it more. I saw this as incredibly generous. Mm. And so long story short, a weekly visit came daily, and pretty soon I parted with nearly $2,000.
Wow.
But yeah, it felt like it was making a difference. I was regularly communicating with her in ways that were difficult to explain. I thought it was doing me good, but I was a wreck. I couldn't eat or sleep. I wasn't going to school much. I just wanted to see Mariella.
That's totally understandable. So, you know, did you go on? What happened next?
Eventually, she made her big play. She said she would let me talk to my mom and I'd be able to ask her things. And it was such a big deal. And I would take so much energy. It would cost $11,400.
Whoa.
Let's just stop there for a moment. $11,400. Can you imagine being 16 years old with no parental guidance and tens of thousands of dollars in your name? Way too much to handle for someone so vulnerable. If you have a young teenage son or daughter, ask them what they'd spend $11,000 on. Do their responses reflect their upbringing, their interest, or what's in fashion right now? Now imagine if they were desperate and vulnerable, without your life experience to help them spend wisely. I dread to think what I'd have done at that age in Meehan's position.
I have no idea why that amount. I was a bit taken aback, but I was pretty far gone. I think I would have considered it if Mariella asked for a limb. I was just excited to speak to my mom, you know?
I do, yeah.
By that time, I started hanging out with the old childhood friend, Kristen. She moved back because she was an army brat, but her dad had retired. We got drunk the following night and told her about Mariella and how I was talking to my dead mom. So she asked how much it had cost me. Mm-hmm. And when I told her, it was just the $2,000 at that point. She fucking freaked.
Mm.
She told my grandma the next day and I flipped out. Because I was under 18, my grandma had control over the account, but up until that point had let me be in charge. She blocked me from withdrawing money, and again, I flipped and fucked up my room.
Okay.
I felt really bad, but actually it was Mariella who I guess made me see the light. I went to her and I told her what had happened and expected her to be really sweet about it, but she was cold. She asked me how I was going to get the $11,400 and I could live with letting my mom down.
Mm.
I asked why the $11,400 mattered and if my mom really wanted to talk to me, and she told me to get out.
Ouch. God.
Right. Well, that was the end. Mariella wouldn't see me. And I just felt like I wanted to die. It was horrible. I felt like I lost my mom again. My friend Kristen, who's now my girlfriend, intervened and got me into a bereavement program, and I started back at church too. So I guess Father Michael didn't hold it too much against me when I told him God was dead.
Right.
But that's why it kind of annoys me when you see tarot or psychics or whatever being treated as a big joke or a bit of harmless fun on TikTok. I don't know what lies beneath, if you like, especially as I do believe in God, but it really messed me and stole all my money at a time when I was really vulnerable and alone. And is Mariella still there? Yeah, she's still practicing. Mm. My grandma wanted to go to the police, but I was just too embarrassed. I felt like one of those dumb boomers who had fallen for QAnon. I just wanted to put it all behind me.
Meehan's story is an unusual and fascinating one because it shows the darker side of something that's considered by most people kind of fun and maybe by some people's reckoning a little bit silly. Reading your horoscopes or learning tarot is as big or even bigger within this generation of teens than previous ones, Because trends can become viral and people can get swept up into crazes that often border on the esoteric. Meehan's vulnerability and grief got him very hooked on a spiritualist, because she basically offered a salve to his pain and a line, whether this was total BS or not, to his much-missed mother. Interestingly, that's the exact psychology being used on some of the skyrocketing numbers of QAnon advocates. That's the cult Meehan referred to earlier. It tells lonely and scared people experiencing pain that they are part of a secret far bigger than them, and builds fierce bonds between the followers. The FBI's attempting to get QAnon listed as a severe terrorist threat. So no, as Meehan learned, and maybe soon lots of us will too, spiritualism and a belief in occultish type things isn't all just fun and tea leaves. Don't get me wrong, there are hundreds of psychics, tarot card readers and spiritualists sharing their messages and educating those who are interested on the internet for free every day. It would be unfair to imply that all self-proclaimed healers will swindle teens of money and take advantage of their naivety, as Mariella did with Meehan. TikTok, Instagram and YouTube are exploring matters of the spiritual or sacred that traditional religions are often failing to do nowadays for young people. As ridiculous as it sounds at first, social media and the functions it can perform, like bringing messages to the masses, hope, and globally shared rituals, sounds in the classic sense of the meaning, kind of religious. So is that it? We just replace places of worship with social media? Meet Mary, a priest I got to know by Twitter. She thinks no.
My day job is National Children and Youth Advisor for the Church of England. So I'm either up in Westminster at the National Church offices or around the country advocating for and on behalf of children and young people in parishes for their full inclusion in every part of church life.
I'm actually horrified to say our introduction was because of a tweet I posted about religious teens using anal sex to work around sex before marriage. I know, sacrilege. I haven't been struck by lightning or called to repent just yet. My producer, Rihanna, couldn't resist getting me to revisit this interaction on the line.
What were your tweets, Chloe?
Well, I was talking at 3 a.m. to some quite evangelical Christians, and he was saying to me that basically him and his friends were all having like anal and oral sex, and it was like their loophole. And I was saying to them, well, doesn't God kind of see that? Like, isn't that kind of cheating? Isn't it a bit of a loophole? So I know it's a very difficult question, but I'm going to have to ask Mary about that and her opinion on that. So I was like, I'm about to ask a priest about anal sex. But anyway, aside from the loopholes of sex before marriage, I really wanted to know Mary's thoughts on young people's quest for meaning.
That's one of the questions that you ask yourself. What is this all about? If I live and then I die, what's the thrust of my life? Is it possible to make a difference? And over the last maybe 5 or 6 years in the work that I've done with young people, it feels as though there's more of an openness to asking those questions. Perhaps amongst some adults, there's a reluctance to address them because we've got adults who are also asking those questions and sometimes feel they need to have the answer. And what I've heard from young people, young adults, is, I don't want you to give me an answer. I want you to let me have the dialogue and the arguments and to question out loud with you so that I can begin to come to a sense of my understanding of my spirituality, of my walk of faith, or of my meaning in life. In the past, we've been too ready to provide an answer. But I think we have a generation that much more wants to be allowed to ask those questions in a safe space.
Safe space for debate, to try opinions and perspectives on the sides, and experiment with beliefs. Could this be the online world? I told Mary about my conversation with Ramon and his notion that TikTok audiences witness modern-day miracles all the time.
His conclusion was, isn't that what the prophets did? irrespective of religion. Isn't that kind of what the original function of religion? So is social media performing maybe what religion once did hundreds of years ago for young people? And I wonder what you thought about that.
That's not something that I'd thought of before. In many ways, miracles are what brings you to the edge of your understanding, and you just don't understand how or why they happen, which I guess in some ways is what social media is doing. People follow Jesus quite often to see more.
Technology and social media is actually acting as a platform for faith and spirituality. Young people are discovering both religion in the traditional sense and then more kind of things that you might call like mysticism. Technology has become a good communicator of those big ideas. And I wondered what you thought about that. And do you think, in particular, I guess the Church of England is using that to the full extent that it could?
Interestingly, the stats that our communications people have done on the various online services and prayers and things that have happened, a huge number of young people, young adults, have been accessing them. You don't go anywhere near the door of a church. Now, I wonder if partly that is, A, we have a generation who don't know what you do in church. They think there are rules. Some people in churches who think there are rules that you need to follow, which there aren't necessarily, about where you sit or what you do when you stand up, when you sit down. So accessing online means that you've got a safe distance between those who might scowl at you because you came in wearing a T-shirt with a slogan on it when they'd all dressed up in their proper Sunday gear. And there's also the possibility of committing yourself without having to have anybody else know that you've committed yourself. So I commit myself to watching this, but nobody's going to come and question me about it afterwards or make sure I come back next week. And it also offers an insight into the way that faith is expressed in many different ways. If you've gone to a church and it's been a fairly dull service, we do have those, you might assume that that's what happens everywhere.
It would be remiss of us to be talking about teenagers, religion and spirituality without mentioning the Christian church behemoth, Hillsong. Hitting pop culture headlines most recently for helping Justin Bieber through his difficulties, this organisation has an online presence as prominent as entertainment brands. It's got millions of fans worldwide. I've been to a couple of services for research reasons, and I was stunned at the pull they had on young people. Any assumption that the Christian church didn't have much appeal anymore with young, white teenagers went completely out the window. There were thousands filling the Tottenham Court Road Theatre, and that was just one of their services on a Sunday. It's been described by musician Tom Wager as a confluence of sophisticated marketing techniques and popular music, and this description is pretty spot on. The atmosphere and ambience was more like a rock concert, albeit rock music I'd never listened to. On their global YouTube channel, Hillsong has 6.3 million subscribers. They do live streams of services where performers belt out songs that preach religious messages in every phrase and lyric. Honestly, these tracks wouldn't entirely be out of place in the charts. You can find them all on Spotify. After my visit, Hillsong were also pretty persistent in getting in contact afterwards, once they had my contact details, offering all kinds of spiritual succour and friendship. So unsurprisingly, young people feel welcomed and a part of this global community from the get-go. Perhaps these digital trends are the perfect environment for young people to experiment with their beliefs and a safe space for them to explore other schools of thought, particularly if they find themselves thinking differently about the world and religion compared to their devout parents.
It's deist, I believe.
So she taught me this word because yeah. I had a similar, I'm not going to say crisis of faith, but I had a similar thing where I was like, okay, there is an existence of something. And she taught me this word called deist.
Yeah.
Those voices belong to Lakika and Vedanti, two sisters whose mum is Sikh and dad Hindu. They explained to me they grew up experiencing and practicing a mix of both religions.
They were sharing a laptop as they told me about their home life. It turns out it was school that helped them learn more about different religions and belief systems.
It impacted the way I saw religion because I began thinking about it more deeply, like, okay, there's God, but like, is there any proof of that? And like, it became really interesting, I guess, because we do religious studies at school and like I would see everybody's points of views and how they treat their religion. And I just, yeah, I'm still thinking about it. Like, I still do pray and stuff, but I still do have a belief in God, but it's becoming more interesting for me, I guess, to figure it out.
If you're a parent who upholds religious practices at home, I can imagine it's a scary thought, allowing your teens to explore other routes of faith or a life without any faith at all. But there does seem to be a shift, as with Lakeika and Vedante, where teenagers are embracing the freedom to explore what religion and faith means to them, be it in the classroom or on the internet. Teenagers discussing their belief systems or attempting to find meaning in an often chaotic world really intrigue me. It strikes at the core of the biggest aim of this podcast, to discover who young people are. While many are still weighing up the pros and cons of traditional religion and spirituality online, some are already certain of their calling and practicing their faith every day. I spoke to Samuel, an 18-year-old devout Christian, about a number of topics for this podcast, from watching porn to drinking booze and abstaining from sex. But for this episode, I wanted to pick his brains about his relationship with God.
I know it's often described as a father-son relationship, which I quite like because it implies that although there is that difference in level of knowledge and understanding, but also power, respect, there's also that love and connection. And almost like, yes, I'd chat to him like he was one of my friends.
Really?
Yeah. I'm trying to get better at it, but praying before I go to sleep every night. This is one of the things that I started doing just before lockdown, actually, was instead of only praying when things weren't going well or when things were going well. So for example, I've been praying by my A-level results. That's a big event. Instead of just doing that, I'm trying to just be like, yeah, this is how my day went.
Do you feel that that's like the most important relationship in your life? More than any, does it sort of transcend any other relationship?
It's a really difficult one because I would love to say yes, and I think it should be, but sometimes it's really difficult because obviously there's people who I can physically be with, touch, hold, and that can make it a lot easier. The one bit of the relationship you can't have with God is the properly physical. So I would say that I am trying to make him the most important relationship in my life, but sometimes it's quite difficult.
When I began choosing themes for this series of the podcast, the issue of faith and spirituality didn't even occur to me. It had come up a bit when I was writing my book Generation Z, but this year it came up loads. If you think about it, this is unsurprising. And the reason is that teenagers are a valuable commodity to everyone because they're just figuring out who they are and what they like. There is no one and nothing that brands want to engage with more than young people. Big tech giants like Facebook, Google, and YouTube are in a battle for teenagers' loyalty. Influencers, writers, and thinkers have figured out if they can tap into trends and dialogues that speak to teenagers, they can capture their attention and their data. It is of little surprise that people started to realise that teenage souls and belief systems were there for the taking. This isn't to say that religion is exactly like brands, but it's also not a million miles away. Join my tribe. Subscribe to my way of thinking. Like my content. Love me. And I'll love you back. It's quite obvious that teenagers feel an increasing need to believe in something and need a light in the darkness of an unknown world and future. That light might be traditional religion, spirituality, past lives, love, or just the glow of an iPhone screen.
But the market of young souls is open for business, and the highest bidders will win. This is a Podimo podcast by Mermaid. I'm Chloe Comby. My producer is Rihanna Coleman, and our audio engineer is John Scott. And we've had production support from Jilly Archer. I've already listened to so many voice notes sent in by you guys about the observations you've had about your own teens, as well as comments on how you view the experience of young people today. The insight from the Generation Z listeners has been so insightful. If you feel you want to share your two cents with me, I want to hear it. Record a voice note on your phone and send it over to me at chloe@hellomermaid.com. I can't wait to hear from you.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,